Good Friday afternoon. Welcome into Grant and Danny. We are live on 106.7 The Fan all over the DMV. You can listen to the show on the Odyssey app wherever you are, coast to coast. Was just talking to a listener who said his son's out in Denver, listens via the Odyssey app every single day. We love that. You can watch us on YouTube as well, the 106.7 The Fan YouTube page. It's a Friday field trip, stop number three. We are at the Craft House in Fairfax Corner. We will be here all day long. We killed in Leesburg, we crushed in Manassas, and Fairfax, it's up to you today to make it 3 for 3. We're excited about this. 4.5 hours of fun as we get ready on a Football Friday for the Commanders to try to get to 7-2 against the Giants on Sunday.
You know, like they always are. It's the normal thing that happens around here. But yes, it's been awesome. Both weeks have been incredible. Looking forward to this one as well. A little 12 BP fastball right here. Let's knock it out of the park.
Vibes are good, by the way.
Yeah, I've already destroyed a grilled cheese. Is that all, Danny? No, there's buffalo chicken inside of it. So take your grilled cheese, send it back, put buffalo chicken inside of it, and now you got the sandwich that I ate, and it was fantastic.
Here's how I know that we're in a good place.
Okay.
I got tots.
Tots.
I ate tots.
Tots.
Crunchy, fried, delicious tots. You can get tots. Are they on the menu? You're in a good place.
Mm-hmm.
This is a happy spot for you and I. The Craft House in Fairfax, Fairfax Corner, big parking lot, no issues there. Come on out right off 66. Don't sit in traffic on your way home today. Come kick it with your pals and talk football with us. Should be a good time. Speaking of the Commanders trying to get to 7-2, we were talking to one of our buddies out here. And he's like, you know, it'd be nice with the Commanders' 100th anniversary coming up soon if they had one more Super Bowl before they turned 100. And I was like, well, this February is before
you
that.
Mean besides this year?
I was like, they are now contenders. He's like, you mean this season? I said, who's better? Name a team that's better at this point. Jared Goff's going to stop them. Come on. But we are feeling good. It feels good to feel good. That's what I'm saying. 6-2. They've been as good as anybody else in the conference. Chiefs notwithstanding, 7-0. They never lose. They find a way. They're not impressive, but they just always score a couple more points than the opponent. Washington's as good as there is in the league right now. So they're going to the Meadowlands to try to win their 7th game out of 9. The last time Washington was 7-2 to start a season was 1996. And that year, by the way, they fell off pretty immensely.
Yeah, that was the Dan Snyder going to the playoffs as inevitable as tomorrow type comments, and then it wasn't.
Well, Snyder was not here yet, 1996.
Maybe it was the different team. You're right. That wasn't that.
1996, this would have been a early Norville Eugene
era. That was a Norville project.
When they had these years where they'd get off these amazing starts and they just completely fall apart. But that was that year, man. This, to me, feels very, very different. It's year one of a regime. New owner, new GM, new head coach, and the quarterback. Oh, by the way, it looks like you've got your answer for a long, long, long time.
Yeah, sorry, I'm a dope. I was thinking of year one of Zorn when Snyder said what he said. But anyway, yeah, this has been here, even with, and what are we known for here in Washington? Even without great quarterback play, and Joe Theismann was terrific in his day, of course, but it's basically been since then that you had an honest to goodness, this is your franchise quarterback. There's been good quarterback play. Kirk Cousins played very well here. Brad Johnson was awesome in 99, and there have been great offenses. But that's not the point. But he is on your roster. This is who you identify. The first player you think of before and after, right? It is that franchise quarterback. 49ers, who do you think of? Montana. Everybody knows it, right? You think of the Patriots, it's Brady. You think of the Colts, it's Manning. Everybody knows that guy. And so far, that's what it seems to be here. Not just a year, not just where you start 3-6 and have to win a bunch in a row just to sneak into a wild card to get mud stomped. This is the real big organizational, everyone pulling the rope in the same direction. You got something special brewing here, and it's all fun.
Yeah, I was thinking about this because you and I actually did the topic, if you remember going back earlier this week, about why not a human being picking a division would suggest the Eagles are going to overtake Washington because that uses history.
Mm-hmm.
But why a computer, yep, just spitting out data would say the Eagles have a better chance to overtake the Commanders who lead them in the division and have a softer remaining schedule, you know, would have a good chance to overtake them. And I was thinking about this, you know, over the years here, just watching this team and the fact that they were fraud and they never really had a shot, even when they were playing okay. Because of Dan Snyder, because of the front office. Like, what would be the argument against their legitimacy now? nationally when you see people say they're really good. This team's legitimate. This team's not going away. They have an ownership group that gives them a chance. They have as good maybe a front office, and it's very early, but so far, how'd that free agency period work out for you? What'd you think of their first draft? Anybody see Johnny Newton this past week in his start? Johnny Newton had 7 pressures this past week in what is now his first real opportunity post-John Allen to play a bunch of snaps and be an impactful player getting up the field next to Deron Payne and the other D-tackles on this team. Mikey Sanders still is playing out of position, balling out. I mean, he could go up and down the draft board to show that Peters, Newmark, this outfit did a really, really good job. So check there. But in the past, you go, why isn't Washington good? Even if they're 3-1 or 2-0 or whatever. Well, I don't like the coaching situation. Quinn's been outstanding. He hired a great staff. Well, what do they got at quarterback, really? It's Heinicke. It's Wentz. It's name that Hammond Egger. Now you got the guy. Mm-hmm. You got Jaden Daniels, who has been a top 5 player at the position this year, according to almost any legitimate ranking. What are they missing? If you want to yell about their defense, we were in Cincinnati. We saw them get destroyed by the Bengals in a win. They keep getting better.
Yes.
We played the Joe Witt press conference on our show yesterday, Danny. The Washington defense in weeks 2 and 3, comparative to their defense currently at this moment right now, there's no comps. I mean, it is a completely different situation. So if they're going to play league average defense moving forward, this team's about to be a real legitimate pain in the butt, and they're going to be a threat to everyone who's got any say in the NFC.
Yeah, only one game in their last, 5, have they given up north of 20 points, and that's to one of the best offenses in the sport in Baltimore, right? Baltimore's doing that to everybody. So they're not good enough to stand tall against one of the great offenses, again, in the sport. They probably couldn't stop themselves, so to speak, right? But the fact is, you're good enough to take advantage of an offensive scuffling. You're good enough to dictate to them. You're good enough to shove it on them. You're good enough to cause pressure and turnover and havoc. You've seen that in the numbers. I mean, through 3 weeks, they had a turnover. Since then, it's been at least 1 per game. Oftentimes, it's been 2. Look at that Carolina game. This has been a totally different night and day group, kind of to your point. And it's all, whether it's Joe Witt and Dan Quinn adjusting, whether it's finding schematically what works, whether it's finding some different spots. You mentioned Mikey Sanders still moving from slot corner, which is what he did in college, to now being an outside guy maybe more often than not, whether it was benching certain guys or reestablishing roles or playing time differentials. I'm not sure. I mean, the answer is probably yes to all of it. But the fact is, that group is improving. And we said this, kind of before the season, without knowing the offense would be as good as it was. They're going to improve on defense. It's a matter of how much. I didn't expect going from 32nd, all the way up to a top 10 type group, and I don't think they are that. But if you're league average, give or take, which means there are going to be good moments, there'll be some bad. There'll be some big games from a Derrick Henry or a Zay Flowers or something like that against you. That's going to happen. But there'll also be really positive moments to kind of balance that out. And if you're in that sphere with an excellent offense, you are a threat to do some things. You're a threat to win a division. You're a threat to win a playoff game or two. You're a threat to, be the kind of team that nobody wants to see or play when it's winning time. And that's all I've asked for a long, long, long time. I thought it would be a couple years from now, quite frankly, but it ain't. So sorry about it. We're doing it now.
I think DVOA is probably the best statistic that rips all of the stuff that is going to differentiate each team from one another based on opponent or where they're playing, and it kind of evens the playing field. It's a really good analysis of just overall value. Weeks 1 through 4, Washington's defensive DVOA was 31st in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Weeks 5 through 8, so similar sample in games, 11th.
Yep.
They are just outside of the top 10 this year right now in defense over their last 4 games. And you could say some of that is the opponent. I agree. But it's 11th. It's not like they're 23rd.
Right.
I mean, they're playing at a really, really high level. They got a great chance playing the Giants to get to 7-2 on Sunday. By the way, we should point out, if the Commanders do get to 7-2 this weekend, they will be the second team in town to get to 7-2. Danny, we got 2 teams cooking in D.C. right now.
Yes, sir.
The Capitals are good. Guess what? This Capitals team that everybody thought was going to be going into this elongated rebuild that was hanging on too long with the Ovechkin chase for the goals record, they had a bunch of money to spend this offseason. And Brian McClellan and his front office brought in new pieces on every line, on every defense pair, in the net. A bevy of acquisitions. And all the experts and the pundits that cover the NHL, yeah, it's a lot of faces, it's a lot of new pieces, but nobody that impactful. This team's not going to be that good. They're one of the better teams in the league right now. It's very early, but they're 7-2. They won again last night, and we simultaneously have two things happening with the Capitals. Number one, they're the best team in the Metro at this point of the season, right now, this moment. And number two, Alex Ovechkin is outperforming expectations, again, as a goal scorer at his age. Every guest we had on leading up to the season said, he's not going to break the record this year, but don't worry, he'll get it next year in his final year. He's on pace to break the record. Five goals now through nine games. He scored again last night. This is how it sounded right here on your flagship home for the Capitals, 106.7 The Fan.
Here's a turnover in front. Ovechkin with a chance. He scores! Alex Ovechkin waiting out. Kaden Primo. He scores on a pass from the top of the blue paint. It's 6-3 Washington.
Number 858 for Ovechkin, who is currently 36 goals behind Wayne Gretzky for the all-time mark. He is on pace for 45 goals this season. A 41-goal season will get him across the finish line. Ovechkin and the Capitals both outperforming what was expected for them, and man, have they been fun to watch. Six more goals last night.
Just nuts. And they've played a lot fewer games than several teams. I think it's like four or five less than New Jersey, for example. They are top 10 in goals for and goals allowed. Ta-da! There you go. And that's a good club. If you look at their goals for average, I think they've scored over three goals in all but one game this season. Maybe it's two. Over four a game. That's a dramatic departure from last year where we're going, where's the offense coming from? It's certainly not the power play. Maybe 5-on-5, they could get some more traffic in front? Question mark? Different story right now.
They had to split atoms last year to score goals.
Just thumb wars against nuclear weapons. I mean, they had no chance. And it's not as if it's at the expense of, you know, everybody rushing forward and not being accountable in the defensive zone. They're top 10, tied for, I think, 10th in terms of goals allowed per game. So something good's happening here.
Yep.
How sustainable is it? TBD, we'll see. But I'll take my chances with Coach Carbs and kind of that veteran group where it's tougher for some of these kids to kind of come up and, to your point, rebuild. They're not really rebuilding. They're sort of retooling this thing on the fly, which I always think is way harder. That's such a tough needle to thread, right? It's good to do one or the other, right? To detonate, blow up, start anew, as they did to begin this Rock the Red era. It's much harder to go, let's sort of keep going with a scalpel. It helps when you don't need to be flipping about or callous, but two legends who were past their prime in terms of injury and ability to continue to kind of dominate, and Backstrom and Oshie are, you know, kind of move on and matriculate.
Well, that was
next
the big
thing
key.
You know, you've got pieces in there that are contributing.
That was the big key, is that the money freed up without having to pay those guys against the cap what you were supposed to allowed you to financially go out and bring in new pieces and rework this roster in whatever image you wanted to. They have added speed. They have added skill. They've still got snarl.
Yeah, the answer is yes.
You're seeing,
they got everything.
Now, Tom Wilson got into a fight last night. Dylan McIlrath a couple of games ago. They're big. They're physical. They can skate with teams like Dallas and Vegas and Jersey, as they have proven. So it's been a really exciting start to their season. As you said, can they play at this level? Is this sustainable? I'm not so sure. But you're 10% of the season over now. I mean, you've done this. It's an 82-game sprint, and you are nine games in playing at a level right now that nobody else in the division has been able to. Most importantly, I would say, in addition to just the fact that they're going to be a playoff-caliber team, hopefully, Ovechkin has five goals, whereas I think a lot of the people that were projecting him to be in the mid-20s or something would have had him at two goals right now. He's doing his thing.
Yeah, remember that slow start last year, right, where we were doing the what's wrong, and we took this for granted for so many years. Still the greatest goal scorer ever to live, as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, then all the stories about the stick that he had to change and everything was different. That second half last year where he, you know, really made a dent getting closer to that record, and now he's kind of picked up where he's left off. He's a different player than he was 5-10 years ago. That's normal when you're 40. It just is, right?
I just bring them up, though, at 7-2, not only because Washington's football team is chasing them down, but because it was not that long ago when we were talking on this show about going into a darker era.
Yeah.
And it didn't seem like the football team was anywhere near being able to compete for a postseason as they were getting ready to fire Rivera. and they were going into an off season. The Caps got it together at the end of last year and kind of caught fire with the kids. But it didn't seem like they would be contending for anything meaningful in the next couple of years beyond just the Ovi record, right? Now you've got the Commanders, who are a juggernaut. The Caps have been a wagon. The Nats, with their prospects, depending on whether or not the Lerners spend a little money this offseason, could actually be very much back into, you know, wild card contention very, very soon. And the Wizards, distant fourth team, no doubt about that. It's going to be a very long year. But Bilal Coulibaly looks okay.
Yeah, they've committed to a rebuild. So instead of just saying, let's do this with a bunch of veterans, they're doing it with kids. They're doing the steps they actually could take to maybe one day be great for the first time really and truly in my life.
Here's where we should start, though, on the MGM National Harbor listener lines with you guys listening all over the DMV today. I want to look at this Giants matchup in detail. Where is New York going to give Washington some issues on Sunday? There's a couple of areas where I think the Commanders are a little susceptible in this head-to-head matchup that we need to cover. But what about this game gives you the most confidence in Washington getting to 7-2? And then where are you nervous about the Giants, a team that, for whatever reason, Washington has struggled with over the years and as recently as week two had their problems pulling away from? We'll open up the phones at 800-636-1067. That's 800-636-1067. Remember, we're live today out and about. It's our Friday field trip series. We're at Craft House in Fairfax. You can come on by. We've got some first-come, first-served shirts from our 106.7 The Fan merch store. We're going to be here until 6:30 this evening, so please come hang with us. Grant and Danny on The Fan. Welcome back to the Craft House in Fairfax, where we are live for Field Trip Friday, the third installment. We're going to be doing this every Friday, out and about with you guys all football season long. We're really excited about it. We're here till 6:30 today, so come on out and kick it with us.
This place rules. The space is awesome, plenty of packing, and the food is delicious. I just got jealous. Our guy Christian, who's not Nolan's Christian, who's flying us all about the country, but our guy Christian from the station had just ordered some churros.
Churros.
God, I'm like, every time I see someone else with those, I get so jelly. I get so jealous of
that.
There
could be churros in your future.
I think I'm going to have to get some.
The day is very young. I was asking earlier about the wings here. I said, should I try the wings? And the guy's like, yeah, try the wings. And I was like, you know what? I'm not going to start with the wings, but we're here for a lot of hours.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to say I'm not going to get the wings at some point.
Did you ever see that movie with Daniel Day-Lewis starring There Will Be Wings? It's a Grant Paulson story.
It was a really good, yeah.
The wings. I eat your wings. Like, that was the whole movie.
My wife normally doesn't watch movies where there's a lot of wings. But in that particular instance, because it was Daniel Day-Lewis, she's like, all right, I normally don't like wing movies, but let's watch this
one. It's a story of Grant when he goes to sports bars and pubs and any place, really, where he's like, I have a hat. I eat your milkshake wings. Wings. That was the movie.
3 o'clock today, coming up in 35 minutes, Daryl Slater of NewJersey.com is going to be joining us to scout the Giants. He will get us inside the locker room with the opponent, who's going to be playing, who isn't going to be playing, and what is that matchup going to look like for Washington. That's coming up at 3 o'clock right here on The Fan. Remember, as you get out here, to come on up and find us at our front table. We've got some first-come, first-served gear from our 106.7 The Fan merch shop we're giving out as well. So it is a good day on a Friday to get out of the office and to come talk football with us.
Gorgeous out. Come on.
Let's get to the matchup, though, because I was talking to a few people yesterday after the show, and they said, what I want to see this weekend is the Commanders improve in the red zone. So I start doing a little digging.
Mm-hmm.
You'll remember that the Giants' red zone performance was the worst of the season, worse than even this past week. Washington statistically was 0-for-6 in the red zone against the G-men in week two. Now, I think that's a little misleading, because one of those red zone trips is at the end of the game where they basically decide to just run out the clock. But let's say it's actually 0-for-5.
Mm-hmm.
Still a disaster.
Yep.
The Giants, statistically, are the fifth-best red zone defensive team in the league. They are third in goal to go when you get inside the 10-yard line. That's where they have really bowed up and been very formidable this season. I think a big part of that is their pass rush. Going back and watching the last couple of games, their D coordinator, Shane Bowen, dials up perfectly timed blitzes. When you get into what Kyle Shanahan calls that strike zone, 30 and in, and the red zone, 20 and in, second down, an obvious pass, clearly third and long. He's dialing it up. They've sacked quarterbacks, forced field goals. This might not be the week where they really get going in the red zone, But the flip side of that is it's not really like defenses have gotten the better of them. It's that they've beaten themselves with penalties.
It's been the mistakes, whether it's procedural or formation-wise, or you know the operation all of a sudden becomes cluttered or disorganized. They got themselves to blame in those Giants situations. And then this past week as well, not converting when they were down there. I mean, you're second and one at the goal line. Then I can't remember if it was the delay of game or the false start backs them up, changes everything, and then they settle for a field goal, and the rest is, you know, is how the game went. But to me, that's obviously a huge deal, is being even okay in the red zone because you're getting there a lot. That's the beauty. You're moving the football as good or better than anybody in the sports. You're going to have opportunities. Can you convert a couple times? I think a couple times will be enough, honestly, against the Giants. For me, the concern is that disastrous offensive thing hasn't happened. I don't mean a bunch of punts. I mean the thing that happens all the time in this league. Great pass rushing teams like the Giants, and they are. That's the one thing they can hang their hat on. The sack, fumble, strip sack, etc. Jaden Daniels has three fumbles. I think one of them is that first pass of the year that's credited as that weird backwards thing that
is
didn't
go real
well.
Is he still listed at three fumbles?
It's three fumbles.
All three of those were in the Tampa game in week one.
Yeah.
Do you know that? He had three fumbles in week one. That means he has not fumbled since.
I didn't realize it was all three.
That's amazing.
So there you go. And my point is, and that's not oh my God, Jaden Daniels is due for a bad play. It's the sport, man. It happens to everybody. And so the fact that there's going to be pressure, and the Giants got to Jaden Daniels in that first game, especially in the first half. In the second half, one of the plays that went down as a sack, he's in the backfield, in the grasp of somebody, somehow wiggles out of it and turns it into a lesser sack. Instead of a 12-yard loss, it was a 2-yard loss by the sideline. But amazing stuff just to get out of danger. Well, sometimes those dangerous plays end up hitting, right, in a bad way. So that's my big concern here, is the Giants' offense not doing as much. I don't think they can, but it's that defense with those hunters that they have in terms of the pass rush making one of those big plays that, you know, it happens in this league all the time.
Rushing yards per play, the Giants are dead last. What I feel best about in this game is that the Commanders are going to be able to just line up and run the football however they want to. I think Brian Robinson downhill will be a win in this game. I think hitting on some of the jet action stuff around the edge, if they want to give it to Zacchaeus or McLaurin, I think they'll be able to hit a play or two there, get the Giants moving horizontally. The teeth of the defense, the interior is pretty strong for New York. But I think if they, you know, gun runs off the edge with Eckler, some of that stretch stuff we used to call the Chris Thompson looks, right?
Yep.
Outside zone, out of shotgun, all those things. I think they'll have whatever they want in the running game. The key is going to be turning that into then getting some big chunks in the passing game down the field. But where I feel best about this game is actually Washington's ability to run the football. And that means Jaden Daniels too, frankly.
Yeah.
I think they're going to be able to move the ball on the ground against the team that has been the worst defensively at stopping the run. Mm-hmm. 5.43 yards per attempt given up by the Giants. But you mentioned their pass rush. This is my concern. And that's the question. We'll get to the calls in a second. 800-636-1067. What do you feel best about? What do you feel worst about this weekend? What I feel most nervous about, they have done such a good job protecting Jaden Daniels.
Yep.
Now you're going up against the team that has the most sacks in the NFL. They sack the quarterback on 15% of plays right now. And it starts in the middle with Dexter Lawrence, who's the new Aaron Donald.
That's a bad dude, man.
He is the best defensive tackle right now in the National Football League. Now, they might be okay with Cosme at right guard, Allegretti at left guard, and Biadasz at center. But that means two of them are working on him.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? It means you're going one-on-one elsewhere. First game where Brandon Coleman is going to start and play every single snap because Cornelius Lucas has already been ruled out. He's going up against Brian Burns. Four sacks, last 4 weeks, won every single game. He's got a sack in five of his last six. This is my issue, is it becomes a math problem. You always talk about it like plugging a dam or kind of putting your finger in the hole and now the water comes out somewhere else. Okay, so let's make sure Lawrence doesn't beat us. Well, now you got one-on-one with Burns with Coleman and his biggest challenge yet in terms of snaps and workload. Something's going to give, and I worry about the pass rush of New York against this offensive line, which has been very, very good.
This is the story of the game to me. If Washington handles that and limits those negative plays, stays ahead of the sticks as they have, for the majority of the season, that's good first down plays. Not necessarily just runs on first down. You don't have to go 1985 football style. But as long as you are positive stuff, whether it's flipping it to Eckler, you know, getting Ertz involved on first down, just moving the football and being ahead of the sticks, I think it limits that pass rush. Because that pass rush is good. We haven't mentioned Azeez Ojulari yet. He's got six sacks. that would lead to a lot of teams, and that's their third pass rush option. That is a really good pass rushing team. So that's my number one concern. You handle that group, eliminate the negative. If you just line up and not screw up against them, you win the football game, right? It doesn't have to be style points every week. It doesn't always have to be a 30-point blowout. I mean, it's nice when it is, and it's fun when it is, and you feel good about it. But you might have to escape with this one in that weird stadium with bad turf, where they don't seem to play well. Just have one of those grown-up, gritty wins right here. You can line up and push them. As long as you don't beat yourself, I think you win the football game.
I hate the turf in the Meadowlands, by the way. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you brought that up. They're actually showing here at the Kraft House in Fairfax Corner on some of the screens last night's Thursday night football game. The Jets and the Texans is being replayed, it looks like, on network.
Yep.
And there was a moment in that game where C.J. Stroud went down pretty much non-contact, mm-hmm. was grabbing at his leg. And for a moment I thought,
oh, no.
Please, no.
Right.
I mean, this is one of the great stars, young stars in the league. One of my favorite quarterbacks to watch, but one of the best young QBs in the sport. He ended up being fine and coming back in. But that's what happens on this turf. Anytime anybody goes down with any issue, you're just fearing the worst. And I don't know how or why they haven't changed it more than they have. They've made some tweaks to it. But ask a player.
Yeah.
You know, look at any of the NFL PA data. I mean, the guys hate playing on that surface. That is something, I guess, if you want to talk about biggest concerns and, mm-hmm. and most nerves going into the weekend, I guess should be on the list. But let's hit the phones. MGM National Harbor listener lines. We want to know from you guys, what are you most nervous about? Is Washington is a road favorite trying to get to 2-0 in the division, 7-2 overall. We'll go out to College Park and talk to Alex on line three. Alex, you're on Grant and Danny. What's up?
Hey, guys. Happy Friday, and thank you for taking my call.
You got it, bro.
So I have two worries really going into this week. My first one, really just a secondary in general, but particularly anytime Benjamin St. Juice is on the field. That game last week was really exciting, but just like 1 minute before, I was screaming at the TV for that PI at the end. So that's like probably my biggest concern. But then also another big concern I have is just if Daniel Jones has one of those Daniel Jones gems against Washington that he does. His career totals against Washington are just so much better than any other team. It's ridiculous. But, those are my two biggest concerns going to this week, definitely.
You take the Daniel Jones point, Danny. I'll talk about the idea of St. Juste.
Yeah, Daniel Jones, in his career against Washington, has been a Pro Bowl quarterback. Against everybody else, with the exception, I think, one time they played Detroit when they were 1 in a million, he's been pedestrian or worse. The numbers are staggering. They're jaw-dropping compared to the rest of the time. It's double-digit touchdowns, a couple more on the ground. I think it's 12 TDs, three picks, another nearly 400 rushing yards, almost twice as many as he has against any other opponent that includes the Eagles, Cowboys, etc. It hasn't mattered. He's been outstanding against Washington. Career, 69% completion percentage, 1,688 yards, 12 touchdowns, three picks, 360 yards rushing, another touchdown in that regard. He has been dynamite against Washington for whatever reason.
What's always hilarious to me, too, is it really doesn't matter what he's doing before or after that game.
Mm-hmm.
So last time they played Washington, remember, the calls were out of New York to bench Daniel Jones coming off of an ACL injury because he was so bad in week one that it just looked like they were broken on offense. And he kind of got right again. He had a couple of touchdowns.
He played well.
He looked fine.
Game.
He has had bigger games. He's had games where he had a quarter of his season-long touchdown passes, mm-hmm. like four touchdown games. It has been pretty staggering. Specific to the Benjamin St. Juste matchup thing, I actually like BSJ in this game against the Giants. Here's what I mean by that. I think this is a game where you give Malik Nabers whatever he wants underneath. So if you look at Malik Nabers statistically this year, he has had some monster games. I love this kid. Have loved him since LSU. But he went 10 for 127 against Washington on 18 targets,
yeah.
which you don't hear of. You don't see that. They scored 18 points and lost.
Yep.
A couple weeks later, 12 catches for 115 against Dallas. They scored 15 points and lost. So if they're going to feed him the football on those crossers, those drags, the smoke throws out to the boundary, let him do it. If they want to give him 14, 15 targets, tackle him. Make sure there's no 40-plus yard gain after the mm-hmm. catch, right? But I would give him those catches and targets. He averages 10 yards per reception this year. That is like athletic tight end territory.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So do that. Make sure Darius Slayton doesn't beat you for 45 at some point on a deep post. Make sure they don't get Jalen Hyatt. I barely remember the guy's name, but I'm pretty sure that's who it is, who they drafted really early a couple of years ago, who they never play, who's a speed burner. Make sure that guy's not getting behind you for a home run.
Yep.
That would be my philosophy. So Neighbors, I think you find a way to kind of give his and make stops. And on the other side, I think the matchup's better for St. Juice with his size and his length to go with Slayton or to try to match up with maybe one of their more physical, bigger receivers on the other side of Malik Neighbors. That's so kind of how I would do it.
That's how they were doing it more or less, I think, starting right around Giants week, okay, as this defense was getting beat a lot. I mean, I remember being at the Cincinnati game with you and our buddies Kondorian and Mora and company, and Ja'Marr Chase was singled up, and I go, touchdown, because it was obvious. They left a guy on an island one time, and it was a 60-plus yard tutty. So they basically eliminated that. They said, we are going to play soft, too deep, big shells, high, away from the line of scrimmage. Let's let everybody deal underneath. And then you saw Neighbors, of course, thrive in that kind of regard. So they basically eliminated putting guys on an island. I would guess you do that again. If you don't give the Giants anything easy, you just let them self-destruct. You let them screw up. They cannot wait to screw up. They cannot wait to have a blown protection. They cannot wait to commit a false start or a hold or something to derail that drive. There's going to be an execution problem. Let them.
Grant and Danny with you on the Fan. We are out and about for stop number 3 of our Friday field trip series. We're at Craft House Fairfax in Fairfax Corner. We'll be here until 6:30. So as you get out of the office, come on by, say hello. We've got some 106.7 The Fan merch store gear for you as you get here. First come, first serve. They got delicious food, cold, wonderful beverages, and a lot of football banter to be had with a lot of Commanders fans who will be out here all day long as we get ready to see the boys try to get to 7-2 in the Meadowlands. Next, let's look around the NFL. What are our 5 favorite games on the slate this weekend? You're listening to G&D. Live from the Craft House in Fairfax on our Friday field trip, Grant and Danny with you on the Fan. Thanks much for making the show part of your day. Means a lot. Now you got options. We'll take you up to 6:30 this evening and another great night of sports all over the DMV. Right now, though, Danny, let's focus in on the rest of the NFL and some of the matchups that catch our attention this week. Best on the slate. What's your favorite NFL game?
So it's probably supposed to be Lions-Packers. And that's probably the easiest answer because that's the best game of the weekend. That's for that really good division where everyone's over 500, the two best teams. I'm fascinated by this Kansas City Chiefs situation. So Sunday Night Football for me, my sneaky one seed, a bit of a hipster pick, Tampa at Kansas City. Kansas City remains unblemished despite the fact that they win one-score games, and it's always really close with them. Tampa's doing this Baker Mayfield renaissance now without Godwin, without Evans, and he was great last week, at least for the first half. So that's my sneaky number one game of the weekend.
The Bucs defense is their problem right now.
All of a sudden, right? Yeah.
It's funny because you're right. They don't have Godwin, and they also don't have Evans, and yet they still, I thought, were good enough on offense, scored 26 points against Atlanta. They could have won the game. But they got shredded by the Falcons' offense. And now it's back-to-back weeks where they've given up a combined 72 points in losses. I'm going to go with the obvious game here. I don't need brownie points for getting cute. Detroit-Green Bay is awesome. That division is amazing. You look at the NFC North and where we're headed with 4 legit contenders, I think, that could make postseason noise. The Lions are 6-1, probably the best team in the NFC. The Packers are 6-2 despite missing Jordan Love a bunch at different points, and he got banged up again. He's supposed to play in this game. Minnesota started 5-0. They've lost 2 in a row, but they're still viewed as a contender because of Brian Flores' defense and the best wide receiver in the league in Justin Jefferson. And we just saw Chicago. They were a Hail Mary conversion away from being 5-2 in their own right. You'd have 4 5-win teams in the same division. First place on the line for the Lions and the Packers. If Green Bay wins, they get to 7-2. They overtake Detroit for now. Matt LaFleur, I think, would be the front runner for coach of the year.
Should be.
Him and Dan Quinn, perhaps, depending on the result with Washington, New York. But I love what LaFleur has been able to do with Malik Willis.
Jordan Love limited this week in practice. Questionable, I think, ultimately, with that groin. He's been beat up and banged up a bunch this year, and they've done it without him, without consistency at the quarterback spot. Don't need to add anything. You covered it. That's my number 2 game of the week, Lions and Packers.
What else you got?
Number 3, Denver-Baltimore. Denver's 5-3. Now, their schedule has been softer than single-ply toilet paper when left under the sink. The faucet running for minutes at a time, but they're still 5-3 in second place in the AFC West. And Baltimore does this weird thing where they're really good until they're not. They lose games they shouldn't lose, and they've let themselves have a couple bogeys against them for reasons that I don't quite understand. This is a chance for them to kind of, you know, try to keep pace and stay at the top of that AFC race, and this is a legitimizing game for Denver.
You know what game I like this weekend is the earliest game in the 1 o'clock slate. I guess they all kick off with a minute or two, but the Cowboys and the Falcons.
That's on my list.
Dallas is 3-4. I didn't think Dallas was very good. I didn't think they were this bad. If Dallas loses to Atlanta, you're sitting at 2 under .500 with a game against the Eagles and then the Texans coming up. They could potentially host Washington at 3-7.
Mm.
At that point, they will have sold off maybe. Their season is obviously in shambles. It's more likely they're going to be 4-6 going into that game, but they're still not that good. This is a winnable game against Atlanta. This is a bad Falcons defense. This is a team you can turn over a little bit. I like Atlanta because the matchup is Robinson, Algier, running game against a Dallas defense that's porous against the run. Cousins makes a couple plays through the air, and you probably do enough. Also, the Cowboys offense is supposed to be their bread and butter. Dak has to be perfect.
Yep.
They can't run the ball. It's CeeDee Lamb and what else in the passing game? They're just not a good team. They were poorly put together, and Jerry's feeling the heat a little bit.
He is indeed, and maybe he'll make a change. Anyway, another game I want to add on to. I think you covered that one very well. The Patriots and the Titans is not on my list. That's a terrible game. I wish they weren't playing it. They shouldn't televise that to anybody, anywhere, at any time. Same with the Saints and the Panthers. I'm going to go to the Dolphins and the Bills, my friend. This game is intriguing to me. The Dolphins' record's terrible. They're almost out of it. This is a last chance to kind of save their season. Buffalo's very good, but that's what I'm fascinated by, right? The Dolphins, when they're right, have had in the years past, this juggernaut of an offense that cannot be stopped until the weather gets cold. We're not there yet. This should be their time with Tua. I'm fascinated to see what happens with him. And Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, who they haven't got on track yet. There's been a lot of things that have gone wrong in Miami this year. This is kind of their last gasp against a really good opponent. Couldn't come at a worse time for them where they're playing Buffalo, who's a bona fide to me.
I like this NFC West game between the Rams and the Seahawks. LA's 3-4. Seattle's 4-4 in a division where 4-4 is the leader at this point. But the Rams look like they got something right out of their bye week. They're getting healthier.
Yep.
They got Puka Nacua back, Cooper Kupp back. Sean McVay has said they're not going to be trading those guys. They beat the Raiders, which if you just play the Raiders, you get to do. But then they played the Vikings in a game that nobody thought they'd win in primetime a week ago on Thursday night. They hung 30. They won by 10. If they could get by Seattle, they'd be 4-4. They would be on the precipice of a playoff spot
where
in the
nobody's
NFC.
Great in that division.
Then they get Miami, New England, a couple of very winnable games after that. Sean McVay doing some of his best coaching. They're 3-1 at home. They got to get a signature road win this weekend, though.
You mentioned this in passing, or this team in passing, but I want to deep dive into it. Colts-Vikings, again, similar situation, right?
So that game, by the way, was flexed to primetime.
Yeah.
It was originally a Sunday day game. They flipped that Eagles-Jaguars game, I think it was, out of Sunday night football to get Colts-Vikings in primetime.
Yeah, so Vikings having dropped a couple now, and the Colts making a change to Joe Flacco. Again, what year is it? What are we doing? What is happening? It's the right call, though. When he's at the helm, their skill guys get better. Josh Downs' production tends to go up. You hope that Pittman's healthy. But they've got some good ingredients in Indy, and they're not out of it in the AFC. Nobody's really taken off other than Kansas City. They're still within a couple of games. They've played Houston tough. They're done with them. But they could be around. I think they're a game or two outside of the playoff picture. So there's still some season to have for them. And Minnesota, you've already said it. I mean, this is the Justin Jefferson show. They need some other guys to step up consistently, and I think this is a good week for them to kind of get back on that winning way.
We've got tickets to the Caps and the Penguins next Friday night, a week from now. By the way, that game, they're giving out 50th anniversary sweaters when you walk in the door, which is pretty cool. We've got those tickets. Everyone's trying to get their hands on. We're giving those away in 1 hour at 4 o'clock right here on The Fan. We are live. Speaking of getting your hands on gear, we got some 106.7 The Fan merch store gear that we're passing out. The football Friday has turned into a Friday field trip series for us on Grant and Danny, and we are at Craft House in Fairfax, Fairfax Corner. We'll be here until 6:30. Next, let's scout the opponent with a member of the Giants Media Corps right here on Grant and Danny.